morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. Steve Sibley is an MTSU graduate from Signal Mountain, Tennessee. He spent his fall semester in Bangladesh as the first recipient, with many more to come, I trust, of the Kawahito Scholarship for Experiential World Poverty Studies, named after Professor Emeritus Dr. Kiyoshi Kawahito of the Department of Economics and Finance, also former director of the U.S.-Japan program. And the whole point of this scholarship is to fund students' experiences in a country that will give them an opportunity to see up close and personal what real gut-wrenching, gut bucket, as they used to say in the backwoods, poverty really is all about. We think we know poverty in this country, as Dr. Kawahito is fond of pointing out. We don't really know in this capitalistic, industrialized nation what true poverty is. Steve had a chance to find out firsthand, and he is going to share his experiences with us today. Steve, congratulations on graduating, as we are airing this after your commencement. And thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Jenna.
We've been receiving, a certain select number of us have been receiving your emails from Bangladesh all throughout your time there. Let's start out with explaining that you had a chance to use a sort of a professional home base, the Grameen Bank, which was founded by Dr. Muhammad Yunus, former MTSU professor and Nobel Peace Prize winner. And explain a little bit, if you would, about Dr. Yunus's concept of microfinance or microcredit, which plays into a great deal of some of the places you went and some of the people you met.
Okay. It all started in 1976. Dr. Yunus was teaching at a university in Chittagong, Bangladesh, and he got somewhat disenchanted with teaching the economic theories in the classroom and not seeing how they worked outside in the impoverished nation of Bangladesh. So he took a select group of students out into the field with him and interviewed poor women there who were borrowing money from local moneylenders at approximately 100% interest, just so that they could have the raw materials to make baskets. And after interviewing them, he discovered that for a total of about $29 US, he could lend money to about 10 women with which they could purchase these materials at a lower cost of interest. And that's basically where it got started, lending small amounts of money to poor women so that they can start income-generating businesses of their own. And then from there, in 1983, he got the charter from the Bangladesh government, and for the past 25 years has been expanding Grameen Bank out into all the villages of Bangladesh.
Now, there are some people who might say, including some bankers in this country, how can such a thing be economically viable? You're dealing with people who have no money to begin with, and you're expecting them to pay it back, certainly not at the exorbitant rates of interest being charged by the land sharks, and nobody's advocating usury, but it might make one wonder in a capitalist society how a bank can survive on that basis.
Dr. Yunus believes that everyone has an entrepreneurial skill. Everyone has the skill of survival. These poor women, while they have no collateral, they have no repayment history, they have the skills to survive and a desire to improve their condition. So there's that motivation for them to utilize the loan properly and make a positive effect on their income. And there's a trust between the bank and its borrowers. Also through the process, the way the members join is by forming a group of five women. And the women who form this group, they know the women that they're forming the group with, they know their character, they know that the women are willing to work hard and that they have the intent to repay the loan. So there's incentive among the members who are joining to pick the best potential members from their village to join. So in this way, the best members, the best poor women of the village, become members of Grameen Bank. That as well, in addition to the motivation, ensures that the women who join are of good character.
So this is a humanitarian activity that really is dependent upon a sense of community and a sense of ethicality. How well does it work?
It works extremely well. They have a repayment rate higher than 98%, which is better, especially nowadays with the subprime mortgage and the default rate on home loans. It has a much higher success rate than many American banks right now. One of the Grameen Bank employees pointed out that Grameen's income and assets grew at about approximately 20% last year, while American banks were failing. So it's interesting to see that this bank that's done the opposite of what a traditional bank would do. Traditional bank would lend money to the richest people, and Grameen Bank lends money to the poorest people. It's interesting to see their financial stability weather this financial crisis.
The capital of Dhaka is where the Grameen Bank is, and that's where you spent some of your time, but the whole purpose of the scholarship was to get you out into areas away from the urban areas and away from the middle-class amenities to actually be with people in the conditions in which they live. And when you went out to see the people who were making clothing or at the yogurt factory, what sorts of living conditions did you find?
Very cramped conditions. You'd have two or three families living in a three-bedroom house. You'd find a family, a mother, father, and two children living in a one-bedroom house. There's no running water, obviously, in most of the houses. The water is being pumped from a well, has to be boiled for 30 minutes prior to drinking, has to be filtered to remove the arsenic that's present in much of their groundwater. You'd see women washing the dishware and the clothes in these mosquito-infested lakes. Just very, very poor conditions.
And these businesses that I mentioned, the one that makes clothing and the one that makes yogurt, they're businesses that were basically set up by Grameen Bank, right? How do they work? They're called social businesses, is that right?
Social businesses, yes. And while most businesses in America are profit-maximizing businesses that have a responsibility to shareholders to maximize shareholder wealth by increasing their income, a social business is created specifically to address a social issue. The profit that's generated, therefore, is not a dollar profit, but a social profit. So in the example of Grameen Danone, the yogurt factory, there's a joint venture with Danone Yogurt of France. The purpose there is to provide low-cost, vitamin and mineral fortified yogurt to rural Bangladeshis to improve nutrition for malnourished children. And then the knitwear factory is actually a for-profit business, but it's owned by two social businesses of Grameen, Grameen Kalyan, which is healthcare and well-being, and Grameen Fund, which provides venture capital for businesses that are designed to help alleviate poverty. So the knitwear factory additionally provides 33% better wages than other garment manufacturers in Bangladesh, provides free transportation to and from work, provides education and childcare for its employees. So in addition to providing funding for Grameen Kalyan and Grameen Fund, it also provides better employment for its workers and other services for its workers.
What are the conditions like inside those two particular businesses?
Grameen Knitwear, the garment factory, had 2,700 employees, roughly 2,000 sitting at sewing machines for 8 hours a day, with an hour break for lunch. The employment did not seem like it made anyone very happy. While it's not a sweatshop, it's certainly made me realize the conditions that people who make our clothing suffer in order to earn as little as $40 per month.
How is it comparable or not comparable to an American factory that would be making clothing?
I haven't visited an American garment factory.
Okay.
I would actually imagine somewhat similar.
Okay.
Very cramped quarters.
Is it ventilated?
It's ventilated, but there's no air conditioning.
Oh.
There's big giant fans overhead.
Mm-hmm. What about the yogurt factory?
The yogurt factory had very few employees. It was a lot of machinery. They employed only 50 people, and about 10 of those were people outside as security or groundskeepers. And the conditions were very clean in the yogurt factory, and was very similar to an American factory.
But these two businesses, they're, you know, rather substantive in size, but the majority of these microcredit loans are actually made to individuals who have much, you know, smaller aspirations, much more individualized aspirations, right?
Yes.
Like women who just want to do their own knitting or establish their own. I believe you mentioned that there was a taxi service, a transportation service of some kind that a woman and her husband put together.
There was. They joined the bank over 20 years ago. And when they joined, the woman's name's Shohana. Her husband was driving a baby taxi it was someone else's baby taxi that they did not own. And so he was making very, very little money doing that. She borrowed 3,000 taka, which is approximately 45 U.S. dollars in today's terms. And with that, she and her husband bought a broken down bus that they renovated and repaired. Once it was operational, he began driving that bus. And in the 20 years since then, they've been able to acquire 6 buses that they have now. And the husband no longer has to drive the buses. He just manages the business. They've hired other drivers. The day that we were there, she was borrowing 600,000 taka, which is approximately 9,000 U.S. dollars, in order to buy their 7th bus. When they first joined, they were renting a 1-bedroom house. Now they own their own, it's approximately 4-bedroom house, and they're renting 2 of those rooms to others, and they have aspirations to build a 5-story building. They plan to live on the top floor and rent the bottom 4 floors to other families.
Would they be considered wealthy now?
Their annual income was higher than the annual income of the Grameen Bank employees who were introducing us to them. They actually were making approximately $15,000 per year. So they would be considered very wealthy over there. The average per capita income over there is about 1,400, based on the average GDP per capita.
Whereas $15,000 a year here in the United States as a salary, you'd be considered, it would be above the poverty line, but you'd still be considered the working poor, I guess.
Yes, yes, the working poor. So the working poor of America would be the wealthy in Bangladesh.
the first email that you sent in before you met all of these interesting people and had all these experiences, it was a little bit of a hairy initial experience, wasn't it, that cab ride in from the airport?
After 24 hours en route to Bangladesh, the cab ride from the airport was quite an eye-opener. Whenever the cab stopped, the cab would get swarmed by beggars, men with, you know, who have had a leg amputated, women with children in their arms, and you could just see that the children were hungry, you know, infants of like a year old, just begging for money. There was a man who had fashioned a makeshift skateboard because his legs didn't work. And he was just sitting on this skateboard, pushing himself through traffic, trying to beg. There were people, just makeshift huts on the side of the road in which people were living. In addition, it was 105 degrees Fahrenheit, so it was hot and stifling. The smoke from traffic was overwhelming. It was quite an experience, and seeing the big piles of garbage on the side of the road, not a trash can in sight, and seeing children sifting through this garbage looking for anything of value, it was heartbreaking, really.
Now, you knew sort of what you were getting into, because that is the point of the whole scholarship, and you knew that when you got the scholarship that you would be interacting in areas that were poverty-stricken and that you would not be lolling around in luxurious or even middle-class accommodations while you were engaged in this learning experience. But still, it had to be a hell of a culture shock.
I had seen poverty on television. You see the, you know, a dollar a day feeds the starving children, and you see those, the faces of those starving children, and it's sad, but you don't get it through the television. Walking from the cab to my hotel where I stayed when I was in Dhaka, there was a little boy who just grabbed onto my arm and wouldn't let go. And you could just feel the desperation in the way that he was grabbing onto me. So culture shock was putting it mildly. It was really overwhelming.
So what sorts of accommodations did you have? Where did you live when you were there?
In Dhaka, I lived at a hotel that had international accommodations. Many of the hotels in Dhaka would not allow international visitors. So while I was in Dhaka, it was the cockroaches in the hotel were well fed. they called it a 3-star hotel, and in American terms, it would have been a 1-star hotel. The staff was incredible at the hotel. They were very helpful. But out in the villages, oftentimes we would stay, the bank would have a living quarters in the second floor of the bank where the employees would sleep, and also any visiting interns that they had. There was running water, but it was not drinkable. The toilet was not a flush toilet. It was not a sit-down toilet. It was a squat toilet where you have to grab a bucket of water and flush it yourself manually. And no air conditioning. It did have grid electricity, but the electricity would go out for hours at a time. It was off probably as often as it was on. Sleeping at night, we had to sleep underneath a mosquito net to protect us from mosquitoes. And then in another town, the bank branch was too new. We slept in the government offices in just a makeshift cot that they'd put together for us. That was actually a much nicer place. They had showers there, and it was a little bit better.
The Grameen Bank in Dhaka have air conditioning, and
they had air conditioning only on certain floors. Like Dr. Eunice's floor had air conditioning.
I'll bet.
Yes. Grameen Shakti, the renewable energy department, had air conditioning. Their offices were actually quite modern and American looking, but most of the building did not have air conditioning. I'd actually have to change shirts when I got to the bank from the sweating on the ride over. And because the bank office offered little relief, the sweating would just continue.
And why did the hotel not accept international visitors, aside from the fact that the cockroaches didn't speak English?
I'm not sure. I think...
Is it a homeland security issue, or is it something else?
I think some of it's... Bangladesh is very... is predominantly Islamic, And I think that many times foreigners brought things into the hotel, alcohol or other things that the hotel owners did not approve of. And then additionally, very few people in Bangladesh speak English. So this hotel had several employees that spoke English very fluently.
So unlike a lot of world capitals where it might be poor out in the country, but the major urban areas have cosmopolitan, sophisticated sections, Dhaka doesn't exactly fit the model of, say, Seoul or Beijing or New Delhi or anything like that.
No, certainly not.